Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and beyond. Every weekday around 10 a.m. Brought to you by the attorneys of Thomas White and Gill. Find them online at memphisfamilylaw.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Parton Show. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's a song called Pizza King by the Cincinnati band Wussy. Pizza King is a regional restaurant chain in Indiana. That song is about cruising through Muncie, Terre Haute, and Valparaiso, among other places. Shout out to our visitors in town tonight, the Indiana Pacers.
All right. Grizz getting an unlikely win yesterday. Before we talk about that, what's going on with Ja Morant?
You know, he's week to week, which I know is pretty vague. I take that to mean we will take our time with it, and we're not going to play him until he's totally in the clear. You know, I think you can expect him at minimum to miss six games, and probably more than that, but that's at a minimum given the way the schedule's set up, because they played yesterday, and then they play tonight, and then they have four games on the road, and I assume he will not be traveling. And so we'll see him some point after that, depending on how it goes. You know, we'd all been sort of wondering after he took that spill against Indiana and he landed and sort of cracked his back or whatever against the knees of the camera person, he came back in the game, and then we wondered, like, when is he going to take a spill that really causes him to miss games? And it turns out that was it. And so, you know, he's having back spasms from that. It sounds not dissimilar from what De'Anthony Melton was dealing with in the preseason that kept him out a few weeks.
So what's your sense? Like, he came back and he played after that. Did he look like he was in it was uncomfortable, and you said you talked to him after the game. Did he seem uncomfortable?
I don't know what you're talking about referring to the last one.
Okay. Maybe you didn't.
He against the Clippers, he seemed fine. Against the Jazz on Friday, he seemed a little more limited. And at one point in the second half, as he was coming out of the game, he sort of motioned to the bench, Taylor Jenkins and the bench, and sort of motioned towards his back and sort of, you know, gestured to them that it was bothering him a little bit. Taylor Jenkins was asked after the game, is he having any issues with the back? And he basically sort of, you know, deferred the question until he could talk to the medical staff at that point. Okay. And so, yeah, it clearly flared back up. As someone who has lower back problems from time to time, like, I can tell you, like, some days are better than others. So the idea that it got better and then it got worse because he turned a certain way or did a certain thing, like, that seems not out of line with a back issue to me.
All right, so then we had other health issues as well. What's the current state of health of the rest of the players on the team? Is he okay?
I have not seen, if they put out an injury report already, they're not having a shoot around today. If they put out an injury report, I haven't seen it. The Valanciunas thing was an illness that unexpected. He made the trip. He made the trip and he was fine and got sick, you know, en route basically. And so, you know, it does not sound like this is anything serious, but it is a back to back. And so it's unclear whether he is, you know, he's going to be ready for tonight. Callie Anderson had been on the injury list with heel soreness and then had played with it and then had been out. And so that's a little unclear too. Brandon Clark was on the injury report with hip soreness yesterday. Played and clearly didn't feel right and did not play the second half. And right. So until we hear otherwise, I would assume all three of those players are still questionable. With Valanciunas seems like probably the most likely one to play.
So we get to see more of Bruno Caboclo, for example.
Yes, and, which is a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
And De'Anthony Melton. They didn't shoot well, but they actually did show why they are relevant and might be interesting pieces going forward, even as they didn't shoot. Melton obviously made that big three late. But your thoughts on...
Yeah. Well, he made that, and he made that big three. And it's one play, right? Yeah. Balls go in, balls don't.
Right.
But he made that big three on a spot up, on a catch and shoot. And the point I've made going back to the summer with Dancy Mountain, and you're dealing with small samples. He was a rookie last year, and so nothing is known completely. But all the evidence suggests he's probably better off the ball than on the ball. If you look at him in Phoenix last year, he was extremely turnover prone. He really struggled to shoot and score off the dribble. But if you isolate his catch and shoot, he shot well in catch and shoot, and he was really good defensively from the jump as a rookie guard, which is hard to do. And I think I wrote this a couple of weeks ago when I did my 10 takes column after 10 games. At some point in the season, like, they have decisions to make next summer on DeAnthony Mountain, Bruno Caboclo, and Josh Jackson. And at some point over the course of the season, they need to play those guys to help make those decisions. But I also think, and this has sort of been a conviction of mine, that I think DeAnthony Mountain and Bruno Caboclo can help you because of their length and because of what they do defensively. The offense is a little bit of a mystery in terms of their shooting and their decision-making, and some of that's going to come and go night to night anyway. Their length will play every night. Their ability to defend multiple positions and to disrupt things with their length defensively, that's something you could pretty much count on every time you put them on the floor. That's not going to come and go like the shooting is. And so, even before, this is not like because of what they did yesterday. I always believed that Melton should be above Grayson Allen on the depth chart. And I believe that Bruno Caboclo would probably – you'd be better off playing him than Solomon Hill. Not only because he'd be better now, which is to be debated, but because you have decisions to make long term. And I know your decision on Solomon Hill pretty much, right?
Yeah, now we'll see Melton at backup point guard because you need him.
Right? Oh, yeah. They need him. They needed them both now.
Right.
But my point is that I believed Melton should be ahead of Grayson Allen on the pecking order.
Right. Grayson Allen comes back, by the way, shoots well yesterday. And
he had his best game of the season. It was a good time for him to have it, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. And then Dylan Brooks, it's interesting. Dylan Brooks seems to be – what did you used to call – Mike – Conley the something factor or with the like he was the
if he the was, Conley correlation
yeah you used to have a Conley correlation. There's very clearly a Dylan Brooks correlation. When he shoots well, they win. That's like they haven't won much.
I have not looked at the numbers on that. That might be true. I mean, it sort of makes sense in that is they have not gotten good play behind him at the two,
right,
all season, which is why I've been saying they should play Melton as the backup two. You know, it's been sort of a pretty big swing factor with their offense, whether he's having a good game or he's not. Because if you're not getting it for him, you're not getting it really from anybody else. And so that's probably true. I think this has been a good season for Dylan Brooks. I think coming into this season, he had the strong rookie year, the surprising rookie year. He had the lost second season. And no one could really say for certain which was true. Like, is he a real player or is he not? And I think he's shown that rookie season was not a fluke. Now, I suspect that, if he's still on this team when they're good, he's probably like the seventh man. He's probably a bench player. But I think he's proven himself to be a real NBA player.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. People, he's sort of a controversial, I don't know. Like, people have different views of Dylan Brooks, but it's because he should be a seventh or eighth guy be a rotation player and on a good team, not necessarily
he's
a guy
who gets you
team.
Buckets off the bench when he's got it going, and then you don't have to play him as much when he doesn't.
Exactly right. So
right.
Who on this team, here we are, right, whatever, the quarter of the way through the season, third of the way through the season, I guess. How, who on this team can you see being pieces of a playoff team in 2 years?
Oh, I think lots of people on this team could, but it depends on A, Jaren Jackson progressing to the point where he's a top three guy on a playoff team, and it depends on you finding someone else who's going to be a top three guy on a playoff team. If you have those three players, there's all kinds of people on this team who could slot into those lower roles if you can push them down the pecking order. And so I don't think that's really much the issue. I think it's more the top line guys are the issue. Like, I totally believe that Dylan Brooks can be the seventh, eighth man on a playoff team. That Kyle Anderson, he has been with San Antonio,
right.
A good, multidimensional role player in a playoff team. I believe that Jonas Valanciunas could be your sort of – platoon big man, your bruiser, He was in Toronto, like on a playoff team. He was in that exact role. And so I think this team has tons of good supporting players. It's more the question of the frontline players.
Right. It really only has two starters, right, on a good team. Isn't that, I mean, two starters, you can have a weak starter.
Yeah, I mean, your fifth starter can be just about anybody. Depending on who the other four guys are.
Yeah. Okay, here, by the way, here you go. So they, if you look at the times that Dylan Brooks has scored 20 or more points, and that's not shoot well, but just productive, right? So he had 26 yesterday. That's a win. He had 20.
He had 31 in Minnesota, against Minnesota.
He had 20 against Utah. That's a win. I'm looking for everyone over 20. He had 21 against San Antonio. That's a win. Yes, he had 31 against Minnesota. That's a win. He had 21 against Brooklyn. That's a win. If he scores 20 or more, he had 30 against Oklahoma City. That's a win. They win.
No.
No? That's a loss. Oh, that's preseason. That was preseason. I'm sorry. I backed up all the way to preseason. It carries – that's how strong this correlation is. It carries even into the preseason.
Right.
I think it's less about Dylan Brooks than you're exactly right. They aren't getting – you need scoring to win basketball games, and you need scoring from your wings to win basketball games, and he's the only one who does it occasionally. Right? Or intermittently.
Jay Crowder's had a couple of games this season, maybe where he's gotten 20, but generally speaking, you're not getting scoring nights from your wing unless you're getting it from Dylan Brooks.
All right. I thought Jaren Jackson got jobbed on that last foul.
The last foul was a bad call, but he had two others before that were bad fouls. And so you sort of if you don't have the bad fouls, then you don't get fouled out on the bad call. And so it sort of goes both ways. I will say with him, I've sort of made a point the last week or two to really watch him closely defensively, stuff that doesn't show up in the box score, because I think that's become the most important thing with him, is the thing, something nobody talks about because it's not in the box score. He has been better defensively the last couple of games. Like, he had those bad fouls. Like, one was a push on the back on offensive rebound, and the other one was he grabbed a jersey. But those weren't fouls in the act of defending, really. He did a good job on Karl-Anthony Towns in terms of contesting shots without fouling. And, Towns goes 1 of 10 from three. He could have easily made a lot of those shots, but they weren't wide open when Jaren was on him. He did a good job contesting without fouling. In the Utah game, there was a long stretch. It was when they built the 15-point lead in the second quarter. There's a long stretch where he was playing center against Rudy Gobert, and he was really doing a good job of keeping him off the glass without fouling. And so I think that's become the most important thing with Jaren, is can he get back to being an impact defender, which he wasn't early this season. It was a good sign he had 4 blocks against Utah, which is the first big block night he's had all season.
What do you think of Tyus Jones? You got a video and everything there back in Minnesota. Well, I guess they love him. He's a Minnesotan.
Yeah, no, he's a native. It's not just that he played for the Timberwolves. He's born and bred Minnesotan. I wrote about this a little bit in the Grizz Week column, as sort of the lead. He has had a disappointing season, but he's actually been good, and it's 3 games basically when he's been pushed into the larger role. So the 2 games where John Morant has missed and he started, he's had good games both of those games. And then the one night where John Morant didn't have it at all and they benched John in the fourth quarter in San Antonio, he played well and they won that game. And so when he's been asked to step up, he's been better. Over the course of the season, he's had a disappointing season. I think there's a couple of main reasons for that. One is his shot has disappeared, his outside shot. And he's never been a particularly good outside shooter, but he's like a career, 34%, I think, and he's at 17% this season. And so I assume that will be better going forward. That has really wrecked his offense. But the other thing is, the thing to me that was, there's all this excitement about his assist turnover ratio or whatever, which I always thought was kind of silly. What was to me most notable about him was a different ratio. It was steal to turnover. It was that he was so good at taking care of the ball and so good at taking it away from other people, and that way to sort of maximize possessions is sort of what was most special about him. And he's gone from being elite in those two areas to being only decent, and that's sort of taken a lot of the shine off of sort of what made him an interesting player. And so he needs to be better, but he can be better, which is the good news.
Chris, thanks very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Chris got the Pacers tonight.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.